We give you all the viral stories that are just about to drop. Just please, oh please, oh please, oh please, don't let this flop. If you keep scrolling, 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 and you're never gonna stop, then please, oh please, oh please, oh please, don't let this flop. From stupid songs and dances, all the cultural advances, we will cover them from bottom to the top. Just please, oh please, oh please, oh please, I promise you'll appease our please, oh please, you please, don't let this flop.
Hi, I'm EJ Dixon.
And I'm Brittany Spanos. Welcome to Don't Let This Flop,
a podcast about TikTok and internet culture brought to you by Rolling Stone. I was trying to think up like what the perfect segue for this, our first segment would be, like if we were on like NPR or something. It's about, we need to talk about Bruno and like its popularity on TikTok. But like, what do you think the segue would be if it was like NPR or the New York Times?
Maybe we're not supposed to talk about Bruno, but TikTok can't stop talking about him.
Yeah, I was thinking that was definitely their, like, we don't talk about Bruno. Specifically, we don't talk about how TikTok is obsessed with the earworm hit from Disney's Encanto.
Both good options.
They're both good. I guess we'll go with both. We don't need to choose. So we need to talk about, you haven't seen Encanto yet, right, Brittany?
I have not.
I've seen it probably about 5 times so far.
Oh my God. Is your son obsessed with it, or are you?
He's like growing obsessed with it.
Yeah.
He's growing. He's like steadily on the trajectory where he will be obsessed with it.
Yeah.
That usually takes like 3 or 4 watches. And he's on like his 4th or 5th. But we watched it a lot in COVID quarantine. Mm-hmm. And the first time I watched it with him, I cried and he leaned over and he said, "Mom, your tears smell." Which is really fucking rude of him. But it's a pretty good movie. The music is written by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Mm-hmm.
Not the score, but the songs.
Yeah.
And We Need to Talk About Bruno is sort of like, it's an ensemble number. It's classic Lin-Manuel Miranda. It's musical theater inspired. Essentially, it's about, the movie centers on this family in Colombia. The Madrigal family is basically, they're all magical except for the main character, mm-hmm. Mirabel, who's played by Stephanie Beatriz. And Bruno is sort of like the outcast of the family because his special power is that he tells the future, but he only tells the future like when it's bad.
Yeah.
So people don't want to hear from him. So this whole number is like, it's a Latin music inspired, like, you know, very poppy number. And it's gone crazy viral. It's charting on Billboard. It's number 5 on the hot chart right now, which is the highest position for a Disney song since Let It Go, mm-hmm. in 2014. And it's interesting because it wasn't really, the movie itself wasn't a big hit first at all. Like when it was released theatrically, it kind of underperformed. It did very well streaming on Disney Plus. And one of the side effects of that is that over Christmas break, We Don't Talk About Bruno has become a huge hit on TikTok, seemingly somewhat organically, just on the strength of the song alone.
I feel like, you know, I think the timing of being able to, like, during the holiday season, like, a Disney movie was always a good and safe bet, I feel like, for, like, family viewing. So, like, the timing of it blowing up makes sense, you know? Like, it's, like, that sort of just, like, general energy behind it, like, for people to kind of gravitate towards it. And also, I saw a lot of people, I feel like, even though I haven't seen the movie and I've gotten the song on my For You page a lot, but I've also seen a lot of thirst for the actress Jessica Darrow, who plays Luisa. Mm-hmm. That's what I've seen all over my For You page too, is like people are like really, really thirsty for Luisa.
What does she look like? The actual character or the actress who plays Luisa?
The actress.
Let me see what she looks like.
Yeah. I think this is like one of her first roles. Like she's like really new, if not her first big major role. I think
Oh my God, she's super hot.
Yeah, she's super hot.
Holy shit. That song slaps too.
Lot, and she's on TikTok, so I've seen a lot of thirst content for her.
Yeah, I really like how everybody is cosplaying the different characters.
Yeah.
It seems very wholesome. Mostly I think it's funny because I've been thinking a lot about Lin-Manuel Miranda recently, actually, like as of this week, because I wrote this piece a couple years ago about how Gen Z finds Lin-Manuel Miranda really cringy.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've talked about this before.
A little bit, yeah.
Like the general anti-LMM sentiment on TikTok. Yeah. Like, yeah. And it's not super surprising because, I mean, as huge of a fan base as Hamilton has, like, there is definitely a strain of his persona that's very, like, aggressively musical theater kid and very, like, aggressively Obama-era optimist millennial Gen Xer.
He's cringe. Which is,
he's definitely cringe.
Yeah.
He's definitely cringe.
A really good piece in The Atlantic that Caitlin Tiffany wrote about how cringe became, like, less so of where we would just kind of casually call things cringe. So, like, the idea of being cringe has become, like, the worst thing you can do on the internet. And Lin-Manuel is a perfect example of that, where he's just, like, full-time cringe. And therefore, yeah, it is the worst way to exist.
And he's not cringe for being – it's not that he's bad because everybody sort of unilaterally agrees that Lin-Manuel Miranda is a genius.
Yeah.
It's more just that every aspect of his persona is, like, so wholly earnest.
It's the
all the time.
It's the worst part of millennial culture, right? Like, I feel like there's, like, sort of that, like, Hamilton is one of the last dregs of, like peak millennial universal culture in a lot of ways. Like, I feel like that was, like, such a big thing in sort of, like, you know, hashtag resistance and, like, millennial identity. Pop cultural identity. So that
exactly.
Sometimes the way that it gets used and the way that Lin-Manuel Miranda gets used in pop culture becomes more cringe. Like, you think of, like, the, you know, January 6th stuff and Hamilton performing Dear Theodosia. You know, like, that's cringe. That was cringe. That was a really cringe moment. When Hamilton itself is a great show, not canceled, it's still really big, but the way that it gets used in culture is very cringe. And the way that Lin-Manuel is actively a part of those moments makes it more cringe.
Right. It's sort of like the establishment. It's the establishment's version of progressivism, basically,
yes.
Is Hamilton. Like, and the fact that Nancy Pelosi, you know, introduces Lin-Manuel and, you know, the entire Hamilton cast sings that song to commemorate January 6th.
Yeah.
Like, that's like the apex of cringe. And I was thinking about the sort of the return of goodwill to Lin-Manuel Miranda in the context of that moment earlier last week, and also in the context of this piece that came out by this writer, Yair Rosenberg, that was talking about how, basically, the piece was talking about how, like, Twitter is a bubble and critics are a bubble because yeah. Everybody is actively trying to cancel things that are universally beloved, like Lin-Manuel Miranda and like J.K. Rowling. And, I mean, I thought it was
that's
kind of specious.
I feel like that's such a difference, though. I feel like, you know, like, Lin-Manuel I don't think he's being canceled.
No one is. That's exactly it. No
but
one is trying
JK
to
Rowling,
cancel.
For sure. I mean, she's a TERF. Like, that's like a different level of something.
But I don't even think people are trying to cancel Harry Potter as a result of J.K. Rowling being
like
a TERF.
Yeah, I don't think people are trying to cancel Harry Potter. I think people are, you know, don't accept her as sort of, like, even for the reunion with HBO Max, like, you would never see a Hamilton reunion without Lin-Manuel Miranda. He's not doing anything, like, that awful and, like, just absolutely grotesque and terrible. But, like, J.K. Rowling is not included in that. Like, they act like the books just sort of existed in the reunion and just, like, were presented. And, like, it's not about her as the writer of it.
Yeah, and I read a piece where, like, HBO was asked to comment on that, and they basically said nothing.
Yeah.
Like, they gave, like, the most non-statement about it ever.
I feel like that's an unfair... Like, I feel like, you know, Lin-Manuel is in a different group than J.K. Rowling, who's an actively awful person. But, like, you know,
yeah.
Lin is just cringe.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was one aspect of the piece that I took issue with, is the fact that J.K. Rowling is being held to task for her moral failings, and, you know, Lin-Manuel doesn't have any, you know, immediately evident moral failings
like
that we
can
point to.
Perfectly fine as a human being, you know, but, like, he's just cringe.
Yeah, he's cringe. He wears tart on the sleeve all the time.
Yeah.
Like, when I think of him, I think of the lip biting photo that went viral. You know, the fact that he was selling that on his own website too, like frame versions of, like, photos of himself.
Yeah.
The way that he pronounces clit in his audiobook reading of the Brief Life of Oscar Wilde.
Yeah.
They got close all right, but did they ever kiss in her car? Did he ever put his hands up her skirt? Did he ever thumb her clit?
I think of, you know, the fact that he casts himself as the romantic lead in Hamilton and like inserts himself into absolutely every single project that he does, despite the fact that he can't really sing.
I think we're at a good Lin-Manuel moment, right? Where it's like with Encanto and Tick, Tick, Boom, for example, too, where he directed that. And like, I know we have different opinions on it, but like people love that movie and like people really love the way that he directed it and love the fact that it's not Lin-Manuel. I mean, he's on screen very briefly. Like, he can't help but put himself in something.
He can't help himself. And I was seeing that with Encanto, too. Like, there were all these videos. Somebody did a video that was a POV, like, Lin in the back of the studio while the rest of the cast records their lines where he's, like, blindfolded and held hostage so he can't insert himself into it. Like, he cannot help himself but insert himself into all of it. But, like, honestly, I mean, we're both theater kids. Like, so are we.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, like, I feel like, again, it's one of those things where he's like a name brand person. And for the people outside of the Twitter bubble and like outside of the, like even the TikTok bubble and outside of the bubble of like being very online, he's a recognizable person that you want to see. I think a lot of people don't, most of the world does not have this level of like ill will or cringiness when they think of Lin-Manuel, whereas he's like a big selling point. Like he's a big star. You know, so that's like, it's, he's an easy sort of person to insert because people care about him in that way.
There's sort of like, there was this moment where, you know, after Hamilton, he was unimpeachable, and then the Zoomers started roasting him on TikTok incessantly, and his stock plummeted a little bit, and now it's rising back up with Encanto. Yeah. And good for him, because the movie slaps.
Yeah.
And the song slaps.
Yeah.
Straight people.
So there was lots of straight people news this week. Big banner week for straight people. I was in the mountains for most of it, and I still did not miss any of this news.
What was the biggest straight people news to you?
So the biggest thing where I was like very actively excited was Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly got engaged to celebrate. They apparently drank each other's blood.
No, they didn't.
I would like to believe they did, personally. No. I just want to believe that it happened. Just a little bit of blood.
Why? Why do you want to believe it happened?
Because I feel like it just makes sense.
I feel like it makes sense for them to say that they did. Yes. To goth posture.
Love, you know, goth love is love.
Do you think they're rushing into it too soon? Are you worried about that?
No. If they get divorced, we'll have a good time. But like, it's not my life. I don't care how they could get married tomorrow. It doesn't affect me. I will watch the entire thing now. But I do like them. I think they're really cute. They've been together for like a year now. They seem like a very genuine couple. I also just love that it's brought more Megan Fox into the world. Like, I just think she's so talented. It sucks that she got so blacklisted by Hollywood for, you know, basically shitting on, like, Michael Bay and being honest about her experiences. But I hope that that means that we'll get even more of Megan Fox in the future. I hope she gets more movies. And in other straight people news, the other news I could not miss that was just, like, literally my favorite thing is Julia Fox and Kanye West are dating. And we've gotten two interview articles, which she has called Fox News, of updates on it. And they just can't stop taking insane photos together.
So Julia Fox, if you're unfamiliar, was Adam Sandler's mistress in Uncut Gems. Has she had like a big role since then? Like, is it, she was like kind of poised to be the next big thing, but I haven't.
It's been, she basically was just kind of cast. This was her first movie ever, was being in Uncut Gems. She had basically met the Safdie brothers. I believe the way that they kind of came together, she met the Safdie brothers like at some point, and they just like really built this role around her. Like, they were just so fascinated by her. She was just a, you know, kind of like New York, I don't want to say socialite, but just sort of a girl on the scene for years, and did some fashion stuff, and she was just like around. And then Uncut Gems was the big role, but she really didn't do a lot after. She's done a few movies. She did have a kid last year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, really, like, it was kind of in the interim, she was pregnant and raising her child, because Uncut Gems came out in late 2019, and then the world went to shit. So it's kind of like the worst timing for you to have your breakout role. Mm-hmm. And then a pandemic hits. And then I'm sure that also put a damper on her getting cast for even more stuff, because she was really poised to be the next big, like, Hollywood it girl. And she's talked about that a little bit in some of the, so there's, she's in the process of her dating Kanye. Basically, it started with them in Miami, and they went to Carbone in Miami. There was a lot of photos taken of them. This is, of course, after the Pete Davidson and Kim Kardashian photos have already gone out and they're becoming more official. All of a sudden, Kanye is with Julia. They're taking a lot of Miami photos. She's basically being styled by him. Soon after, they go back to New York together. They go to Carbone in New York. They're basically going to every Carbone in the United States.
Carbone press tour. Did you see the photos where she was like, he directed a photo shoot of me at Carbone while the entire restaurant cheered? And like, they did not, the footage does not indicate that there was cheering going on.
There was like an article that she did for Interview Magazine soon after this, which is like one, I think it was fairly iconic. I think a lot of people thought this was in fact cringe, but I thought it was hilarious that this happened. But basically it was just called like second date or first date or something. And it was the photos that Kanye had directed of her. He had basically rented out a hotel room and like brought all these clothes in to dress her like a doll. And like, then they took all these like photos of her like straddling him. And she wrote in detail about their dates. And it was pretty amazing that that exists in the world.
It is probably the most explicitly orchestrated celebrity, like PR orchestrated celebrity relationship I've ever seen. Like,
it's pretty mesmerizing how just like insane it is from start to finish.
There's this ongoing like conversation on TikTok in particular. I've seen it about like PR relationships, like celebrity relationships that are bullshit and orchestrated either to like promote a certain project or to distract from a PR scandal. Like some of the obvious examples of PR relationships are like Camila Cabello and Shawn Mendes or Ben Affleck and Ana de Armas. Can you think of any others?
I actually just saw some TikToks today about how people think Nick and Priyanka are, of course, this is all alleged. Like none of this, like we have confirmation, but you can almost say most celebrity relationships that seem to be very PR forward, seem to be tied to a project, seem to be tied to like getting someone more like coverage in the media or like help amplify their celebrity in any way is in fact a PR relationship.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to note that like my understanding of this concept is that it's not entirely inorganic. Like it's not like there aren't genuine feelings.
Yeah.
Like between the two parties, it's just often initiated by publicists or managers saying like, oh, this person would be good for you, you know, for your image, or this person would be good to distract from, you know, some certain news story. And obviously having that kind of relationship would be pretty instrumental for Kanye right now for a number of reasons, but primarily because his ex-wife Kim Kardashian is currently dating Pete Davidson.
Yeah. So there's been also like a series of other controversies happening around not only Kim and Kanye, but of course the entire Kardashian West family. This is also a really good distraction from the Tristan and Khloe shit show that is happening between them. It's a good distraction from Travis Scott and Kylie. And, you know, there's a lot of other ways that I think that people who care a lot about covering the Kardashians and like kind of love to like dissect the relationships have pointed out that this is all like really good PR to kind of distract from the other things happening. There was also a sexual assault allegation against Kris Jenner from her former bodyguard that is in the news as well. But of course, you know, the Kim and Pete and Julia and Kanye stuff is really juicy and all over.
And what's interesting to me, though, is that, like, it seems like Julia isn't even really like pretending that this isn't.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's really good for her. And she's pointing out in a lot of stuff. I think like the one thing about it, it's been interesting to see how people react to it, because I think people have sort of gone to the route of like, oh, he's like controlling her, blah, blah, blah. Like she's literally said, like, I just gave up my entire life because this was easy. Like she literally said in the last interview article that she did where she was like, yeah, like I just like kind of willingly gave up the stuff because it was just like, why not? You know, I think she's been in the news a little bit more lately. She's kind of talked a lot about the stuff with her ex-husband and just like how awful and abusive he was, and just like also about how a lot of the career stuff she was not expecting. Like she was like, you know, I should have gotten like deals with like fashion houses after Uncut Gems, and things just like didn't happen that way. So this has been like a really good thing in terms of that. Like I feel like she's just sort of also in, from the perspective that I have, of course we don't know behind the scenes, but it does seem like she's a little bit more in control of the narrative in terms of the fact that she's literally the one talking and literally controlling the narrative around it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like her going in, because these posts for Interview that she's doing, like these weird little write-ups, like it's it's kind of unprecedented, like, as far as I'm concerned. Like, I don't, do you remember, like, any one celebrity, like, giving another outlet, like, so explicitly, like, exclusive rights to cover an emerging relationship? Like, they're obviously celebrities forge deals with outlets, like, people, they'll give people, like, rights to publish baby photos and stuff. But this is, like, very explicit.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a more sort of transparent way. I mean, I think the only other really comparison is the type of partnerships that Kim and Chris made for the Kardashian family with TMZ, you know, and just in terms of, like, having the exclusives on photos of, like, her and Kanye early in their relationship. But, like, obviously it wasn't Kim writing it out. It was just sort of, like, if he showed up on the reality show, that was part of that. But this is much more, this is much different and much more transparent.
Yeah, and there are people on TikTok pointing this out, like, people who are in the industry and publicists who are, you know, making content that's pointing out, you know, here are some red flags that this is not a real relationship. Like, for instance, the fact that, like, on their first date, he had a suite of clothes available for her for a photo shoot. Like, that's not standard organic first date behavior.
She said when she went back to her hotel room, there was racks of clothes in her size. So you're telling me in 24 hours, Kanye had Balenciaga fly out clothes? Absolutely not. This was premeditated. It was 100% set up.
But she's also, I mean, she's being so explicit about it. Like, there isn't even really a point to this content. Like, there's this one quote she gives in the interview post where she's talking about how her relationship with Kanye and how she was a good candidate for this position. Like, those are the exact words that she uses, like, as if this was a job that she applied for.
Yeah.
Which it probably was to some degree.
The other thing to also point out, again, like, I don't think this is a real relationship. I'm just obsessed with it. But, like, like, The clothing thing, that is kind of Kanye's kink, though. Like, he loves making over women.
That's
he did that
true.
With Amber Rose. He did that with Kim. You know, he did that immediately with Kim. He literally, like, there was an episode of The Kardashians where he was like, I had to clean out Kim's closet. So this is kind of like a kink for him. So even
do you
if
think
it
it's
does,
a kink or do you think it's just like a thing he enjoyed? But do you think there's like a sexual component?
Oh, I think so. Because it's always with his girlfriend. It's not doing it with like Jay-Z. You know, he's like, this is with his girlfriend. Like, these are with women that he's presenting on his side. Like, I, you know, I get why they're like, that's not normal first date behavior, but this is Kanye. And that's literally what he does with every single girl that he dates. Like, I'm sure he was just like, whoever shows up is getting these clothes.
Yeah, exactly. He thinks of them as Barbie dolls.
Which is why it's so funny that there was a photo shoot that Pete and Julia did. Sort of, I think it was, no, Pete and Ariana weren't together anymore. I think this was like Pete becoming sort of famous in his own right post Ariana and Julia, of course, with Uncut Gems blowing up. They did a photo shoot for Paper Magazine where they are literally stylized like Barbie and Ken in the shoot and like doing like this very like sort of like American Dreams kind of like them in a house and just like being like, you know, Barbie and Ken in this house, which people, a lot of people shared and pointed out as being sort of a really funny kind of precursor to these two dueling relationships, which I like. I have a theory that Pete and Julia planned this, but I do think that this is good publicity for both of them in terms of being able to like Pete to really take that step out of being on SNL and like having like a bigger career and being a bigger celebrity, and Julia also getting back into Hollywood. Like, she's the photos of, you know, those videos that were going viral of that awful looking hang with like Kanye and Madonna and you know, I don't remember who else.
It looked so boring. It was so uncomfortable. None of those people wanted to be together.
However, Julia and Madonna apparently are old friends. And the photo that Madonna had posted was just of her and Julia first. And she said, we were having a meeting about my movie. Madonna has a very big movie that she wrote about her life that she had a meeting with Julia about. Like, this is all.
Oh, that's going to be awful.
This is all strategic. Like, it's all like, it all seems. And that movie is co-written by Diablo Cody, who wrote Jennifer's Body, starring Megan Fox. It all comes full circle.
This is like, you're like that photo of Charlie Day in front of the whiteboard.
That's literally like how I look every single day. That's literally what I look like trying to explain celebrity news. There was a point where my friend, I don't even remember what we were talking about. A friend asked me, was just like, oh, I wonder what Christina Milian is up to. And then I literally listed out everything she was up to. I don't know why I know it.
What is she up to?
Well,
just name one thing. Name one thing that
she was dating
to.
Lil Wayne. My friends didn't know.
She was dating Lil Wayne. I didn't know that.
Oh my God. I can't. I can't carry all this knowledge if no one else carries it too.
I'm glad I know that. Thank you for imparting that to
me. Yeah, I wonder if they're still together. I don't think they are, but like they were together for a really long time, like longer than I think, anyone realized. But I think they're plotting.
I think they're planning too. I think they have sleepovers.
I think they literally like probably were just like, this is a good opportunity for both of us.
And they were right. Yeah.
It's very good. I feel like, you know, Pete's probably going to be cast in something really big soon. I think there's been a lot of talks of stuff that he is like, people are eyeing him for the Oscars, to host the Oscars. Like, what even? Actually, I do find Pete Davidson very funny.
Too good for the Oscars.
Yeah, I don't think he, I don't know. He might be fine for it. But like, if they just kind of let him do whatever he wants, I'm sure it'll be fine.
They're not going to let him do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
They're undoubtedly not going. I mean, yeah, I think they're having sleepovers. I think they're plotting.
Yeah.
To what end they're plotting, I don't know. But I definitely agree with you. They know each other. And they're playing chess and we're playing checkers.
Right.
Exactly. Right.
So in other news, another thing I did not miss in the mountains was the return of Euphoria, one of my favorite shows. And with the return of Euphoria, that means I now have a new lookbook for 2022 because the fashion on there is insane. So even as people were gearing up for it, there's a lot of content being made about Euphoria and a lot about especially the fashion and the clothes that the girls wear on there because, they'll show up to school in like cutout jumpsuits and like low rise pants and like bondage wear just to like go to math class. And so one of my favorite trends right now is just about that. So it's an audio from SpongeBob and Squidward is saying, "Where's your uniform?" And then so someone's just kind of wearing regular clothes. And then the idea is like getting ready for school and remembering you go to Euphoria High. And all of a sudden they come back in some like very, very extravagant outfit that's like just like too sexy to wear to school. I love the fashion of Euphoria though. I love that they show up to school in the most insane outfits. Love that's how they dress just to like go, you know, learn about Shakespeare. Just very good.
The reason why this trend in particular is so funny to me is because I had just assumed that's how Zoomers dress now. You know, like yeah. I had no reason to think it was extreme.
Yeah, I feel like I didn't, like, I feel like, you know, sometimes I'd be like, they're wearing that to like, you know, like the like party outfits. I'm just kind of like, that's like so much. I was wearing like boot cut jeans and like, like Panic of the Disco shirts to go hang out with my friends. But I also didn't go to parties in high school. So maybe I just didn't know how people were dressing. But yeah, it's very, very Zoomer core anyway, like what we see on TikTok and what everyone's wearing. And also the fact that everyone who's doing this trend already has those clothes.
Yeah, like there's like, a reason why everybody has like the IMG jumpsuit that Maddie wears in like the chili scene in the first season, like in their closets.
Yeah, I was like, everyone already owns this stuff. So we all go to Euphoria High.
We all go to Euphoria High. There are very few things that have been keeping me sane over the past 2 years as much as this woman, Molly McCran, documenting her quest to sing the Louis Armstrong song, "What a Wonderful World," one letter at a time. Have you seen this at all?
I have not.
So basically, she's been doing this since last November. She has been singing only one letter of "What a Wonderful World," and then she duets her past versions of it so it comes together. And she started with the S's. And then she added the T's. And then she added the M's, the K's, the L's, and so on and so forth. She has developed like the small cult following for this, with people watching her like gradual descent into madness. And there are some people, like she has some detractors along the way. Like people have been begging her to do the vowels for months because she was only doing consonants for a while. Some people said she should do like phonemes, like breaking them down into sounds so it could come together more cohesively at the end. But like that was never the point. Like the point was that we were just watching this person's slow descent into madness by embarking on this insane journey. It was kind of like the himbo who sucks on the gummy snake that we were talking about a couple episodes. Did we need to check in on him. No, I don't think he finished it.
Next episode, we'll check in on him.
Day 6, sucking on the world's biggest gummy snake.
I hope he's not dead. That would be bad.
I hope he doesn't. Yeah. Let's hope he's not pre-diabetic from all the gummy worm. It's concerning.
I feel like he would know. I feel like that is perhaps like he wouldn't embark on that challenge if he were like had a propensity toward pre-diabetes.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
We'll find out. Stay tuned for the next episode. Don't let this flop. We'll check in on the man sucking a giant gummy worm.
But this woman, like, she just finished it. She debuted the full song. She finally added the W's. It was a huge deal. It was, like, triumphant for the people who had been following it. Guess if it sounded good.
Did it sound good?
No, it didn't sound good. It sounds awful. It does not, okay, it does not come together at all.
I need to listen to it. Oh, this sounds awful. Also, why is she in like a bunch of weird like makeup?
Because she basically like she added this thing where she was like descending into madness with every letter she adds. So she started doing like Joker makeup.
Oh my God. I actually actively did not enjoy that.
It kind of makes me wonder like whether that was the point. Like if this was some sort of like meta commentary on like these sorts of videos that tend to go viral on TikTok that like document this ongoing project towards no end. And she was trying to prove like how truly empty that I don't know.
That was deeply unsatisfying to watch.
It was it's deeply unsatisfying watching it. It's the most anticlimactic thing that I've ever witnessed. And it was really fun to watch. Like it was, I thought I would lose interest by like the 16th letter, but no, like
it is quite a feat though. Like I feel like my brain hurts from the idea of breaking down the entire song to like get all of the letters and like the, I don't know, just like knowing how to do that.
I do wonder why she chose that song. Would you have like a particular relationship with that song? Do you have an opinion about that song?
It's a perfectly fine song.
That's exactly how I feel. I like that song.
I feel like it's probably because it's instantly recognizable and it's simple.
I would love to ask her why she chose it. I would love to ask her which letter was I'd love to have her on the pod. I'd love to have her on the pod with the himbo, the gummy snake himbo.
Yeah.
I feel like they'd have a lot to talk about.
I know. We need to find out if he finished. I am very curious.
I think to myself, what a wonderful
way. And now it's time for Himbo of the Week. Speaking of a great himbo, this is the return himbo. We've talked about Francis Bourgeois like 3 times now on the podcast, but I'm just simply obsessed with him, and he's just very newsy. Like, there's a lot to talk about with him.
There is a lot to talk about with him.
Yeah. Just to briefly catch up on Francis Bourgeois and the types of conversations we had about him, we have celebrated his deeply soothing and earnest train content in the past. We did that for, I believe it was the Thanksgiving episode or the holiday episode where we talked about just, like, him generally and how much we loved him and his just train spotting content. Then we did a recent catch-up about and crowned him a himbo of the week because we talked about how he has a past of being a roadman.
An actual himbo, possibly.
Yes, an actual himbo.
Allegedly.
And is a model and all this other stuff. Today, we've seen the latest update in Francis Bourgeois, which is that he was joined by Joe Jonas in a TikTok.
I'm train spotty on the West Coast Main Line today with my friend Joe.
Hello.
Joe's come from America.
Yes.
Please! 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 Oh! Oh! Come on!
I screamed when I saw this. I was so mad you were on vacation.
I know. Even though I have dragged the Jonas Brothers for the Biden video that they did, I do love the Jonas Brothers. I would die for Joe. I have weaseled my way into interviewing him multiple times. Just like a psycho stalker. So this was deeply good content for me. Like, this was like very perfect Britney baited content of Joe Jonas looking hot with Francis Bourgeois, who I would date, and trains.
Has Joe Jonas always been cool? I wanted to ask you this as someone who's interviewed him. Like, because it seems like this transformation like happened overnight.
So, so there's been a journey, right, in Jonas lore, where I think like in the early years of the Jonas Brothers, Joe being the like main singer, you know, the singing is between Nick and Joe, but Joe didn't play an instrument. So he was sort of tasked with being the main singer. He was also like the one who was like, you know, he was just like the hottest one for the longest time, I feel like. And then like Nick was like cute to people who were younger. Kevin, I don't know, some people like Kevin. And but Joe was like the hot one. Like he was the lead in Camp Rock. Like he was the lead in the show. He was the one that dated Taylor Swift and like dated like other like really like a bunch of like actresses and stuff. Then Nick got really hot. And then Joe kind of disappeared for a little bit. Not disappeared, but he was like not as famous for a little bit. And he was like, he had a failed solo career. Then he joined DNCE. That did a little bit better. I love DNCE. I thought they were a great band. Cake by the Ocean, incredible song.
Same.
And, but Nick, he got really buff. He started acting a lot. He was in Scream Queens. He was in Jumanji. Like, he became, like, a big actor. And, like, he became the most famous one. And then they reunited. And now the thirst for Joe has returned because Joe is also really buff right now. And he's also, he's always been the funniest. That's the other thing about Joe, is that he was always the funniest Jonas brother. Like, he, like, Nick always took himself a little bit too seriously. Kevin, like, a little more, like, tactical and, like, shy sometimes, like, in terms of the interviews. Joe was always the funniest one. Like, he always made silly content on, like, MySpace or, like, on the Jonas Brothers, like, Twitter page. He was always notable for being kind of, like, the goofy brother. He's much closer to, like, Frankie in terms of personality. As we know, Frankie Jonas is very popular on TikTok. But Joe has a really, really good TikTok. He's very funny on it. And he's always been really funny on it. And so I'm glad people are now also appreciating the fact that Joe has always been the funniest Jonas brother. Well, second funniest after Frankie, but it's, funniest in the band.
It's such a smart collab. Like, there's, I was so much more excited to see him with Francis Bourgeois than with Joe Biden, like, by many, many degrees of magnitude. Like, the only smarter possible collab that he could have done is with those twins who gay bait, who we talked about, who won Himbo of the Week a couple of months ago. Like, the twins who, like, who danced sexily and, like, almost kissed. That would be a great collab for him.
Yeah. Joe has always had, like, the best sense of humor, I would say, of the Jonas Brothers. Like, he's been the one who's always, like, I feel like Nick always was, especially when Nick was trying to go solo, he had less of a sense of humor about it. But I feel like Joe has always had, like, a good sense of humor about the band and about himself. Like, he's always been the silliest Jonas brother. So he is also deeply online. So he's always, like, reacting to stuff. I don't know how much you've seen the Jonas Brothers on TikTok.
I get served them a
generally.
Lot. I think that TikTok thinks I'm a little younger than I am, which makes sense because I did actually have a Jonas Brothers poster in my dorm room in college my freshman or sophomore year, which everybody made fun of me for. But, yeah, I get a lot of Jonas Brothers. They're really fucking hot. They're all, I am a Kevin stan. I always have been and I always will be. I love a man with thick eyebrows.
Yes. And, like, they all have TikTok accounts. They all are really, really funny on it. Joe is the one who typically is, like, in the comments of various stuff. Like, he's, like, in the comments of random TikToks, you'll see him. And he's, like, the one who seems to be, like, on TikTok the most. Like, he seems very aware of the trends happening on TikTok and has a very good time with them. So he's, like, he's, like, the most online of the Jonas Brothers. Again, other than Frankie. I'm talking about the band properly. Obviously, Frankie is, like, the most elite Jonas brother. But in the band, Joe is the most online. So he's, like, very aware. So it's very clear, like, he knows what the trends are. He knows about Francis. I think he's commented a lot of Francis's videos in the past. It made sense that they would eventually link up. I just didn't expect it to happen so soon. I'm so thrilled that it happened.
His wife is also pretty online too, right? Sophie Turner. Yeah.
She's very funny because, like, she's like a huge Taylor Swift fan. And obviously, as we know, there's like four albums of Taylor Swift songs about Joe Jonas and about their like 2 month relationship. And Sophie was like sharing a bunch of like songs from like Fearless after it was released, which is the album very famously dragging Joe for the way that he broke up with Taylor. And Sophie was like sharing those songs. So she's very online and has a very good sort of like sense of humor about it and jokes a lot about Joe content.
I really hope that's not a PR relationship. I don't think it is. I don't think it is. I really love them together. Yeah. They're super low key. They're super funny. And
they got married in Vegas. Like, they just kind of like are chill.
The only way that video, the Francis Bourgeois video and the Joe Jonas video would have been better is if they'd kissed.
Yeah, they should have made out a little bit.
I don't know why I don't see why they didn't.
I think we can agree most himbo content would be better if they all kissed.
Yes.
But it's just two women's opinions.
Thanks so much for listening to Don't Let This Flop, This Week in TikTok, brought to you by Rolling Stone and Cumulus Podcast Network. Written and hosted by me, EJ Dixon, and Brittany Spanos. Executive produced by Jason Fine, Bridget Shelsey, and Elizabeth Garber-Paul. Edited by Dan Stein. And original music composed by Daniel Merzlove. See you next week.